Hello, Miranda Tetlow here from ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. Today, I want you to meet one of the bravest women I've ever come across. Carol Ferland lost both of her parents in a concentration camp during World War II. She grew up in an orphanage in Croatia and went on to study and work as a teacher. One day, one of her friends suggested she write to an Italian boy in Australia. She only spoke Croatian, he only spoke English and Italian. But they wrote letters, they fell in love, and one day, Carol found herself on a plane to Darwin. It is an extraordinary story. You will laugh and you will cry. Carol, it's such an honour to get to speak to you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell me about where you're from.
I'm from a town near Zagreb. That's the capital of Croatia. I was born there, I think. And all what I remember during the war, then one night, German come and took all village in the prison, took everybody out from the city, from the town, put us in the train carriages, and we traveled, I don't know how long or anything, and in the night we arrived in this large forest. There was a big camp over there. It was concentration camp. They put men on one side and women on another side with the children. So I was together with my mom. The ladies, women working very hard every day, cutting the big, heavy stones, doing men's work. One day, they are digging big hole. A few days after, they saw the few people and put them in the line near that wall, near the wall, and said, "This is your last day." So soldiers come and gun down all those people. Before that happened, my mom talked to the lady next to me, I was a little girl, and said, "If you survive the war, would you look after my daughter?" And she promised that she would look after me. So when they gunned down those people, they rolled them with the big machines in the grave that they dig up the night before. War finished, and this lady took me in orphanage. So I spent all my life in orphanage.
Oh, Carol, what a horrific incident that no one should have to go through.
No. So, but government was very good to me. They fed us and they schooled us, and I finished my primary, secondary school and university. They put me, because I was a very good scholar, so they put me, said, "You will be teacher. You're going to teacher's college." So I have to do what they said.
Where was the orphanage, Carol?
Where was it? I spent in quite few places because they're shifting us all the time. And during that time, they were taking pictures of all of us kids, war kids who didn't have no one. So putting in the papers through Red Cross was doing and mailing all over Yugoslavia and neighbor's country to see if anybody's alive. They maybe find any relatives. So, you know, lost uncle, aunties, cousins. But for me, no one comes forward. A lot of people found aunties and cousins. Nobody come for me. So I was always on my own.
Did you ever keep in touch with the woman that your mother had asked
no,
to keep an eye?
No, when I finished teacher's college, I tried to do, but she was already gone and nobody knew nothing about her. So I'm grateful she put me in the probably right place that, you know, I was secure, fed, and looked after.
It's a great act of love by your mum, that final act, isn't it, to make sure that you were going to be taken care of.
Yeah, it was.
What do you remember about your mum?
I don't remember much, but when I was younger, I used to dream a lot about this lady that used to come to me and call me by my name. And But this woman was without head. So probably I was too young, couldn't remember her features in the head, how she was, how she looked. So I don't know nothing about. Yeah.
Do you have any memories of your father?
No, none. And I never knew if I had how big our family was or anything like that. But I'm grateful that I wasn't left on the street or been, I don't know how would I be if I was that woman or anything, you know, what will happen with me. You know, I wasn't abused or things like that because I was very well looked after and I appreciate what the government done for me.
It sounds like you really thrived in terms of your education. Was that a safe place for you, an outlet for you?
That's right. And when I finished school, teachers' college, yeah, I was teaching, but in meantime, I was still in teachers' college, and I had a friend who had a brother in Australia. And they keep writing to each other. And one day, she got a letter from her brother, and he said, he got a friend, Italian friend. Would anybody like to start writing to this his friend, you know, he would like to keep in touch. And, but he said, doesn't matter if you don't speak Italian or anything like that. He said, you write in Croatian and my brother will translate to him in English. And everybody said, Carol, why don't you go? He said, you must be mad. He said, no. He said, you got no one here. You got no family, no one. He said, be good. Why not? And I think, oh, adventure. I got no one. So I said, okay, I can write to him. So that's how we start corresponding with this young man that live in Australia, Italian.
What was his name?
Peter.
Peter. And what did you write in your first letter to Peter?
Oh, my name is so-and-so, and I will finish nearly teacher's college. I'll be teacher, and I got no one. Maybe if he got to write in the letter and we can keep writing and we maybe fall in love or try to keep in touch for long as we can and see what will happen with this.
And so you sent this letter in Croatian. It went all the way to Australia, and he wrote back. What did he write back?
Oh, I'm so pleased. I can't write in Croatian, but so this letter was going three way. His friend, his name was Frank, and he had to write all this, what he said. Yeah, he was very happy to receive a letter and to keep in touch with me and see how we're going and maybe something will happen. And see, in the beginning, he said, because he was working in Ram Jungle uranium mine, and he said he wants to save some money and build a house in town, in Darwin. So you can come over there, not come in the bush, in the mine over there. So he will look after you and he provide everything for you. And I said, I never had no one done things like that for me, you know. I said, oh, okay. So we used to keep writing for 2.5 years. And he sent his parents from Italy to come and see me. So they come and they brought with them one lady that speak Italian, yeah, Croatian. So they could translate and they said, okay. So she's okay. They wrote to his son. Yeah, she'll be all right. You can keep writing and see what's happened, but we approve of her. And everybody in town talks very nice about this woman that you're going to get to know better.
And meanwhile, you were hearing from Peter and getting an impression of him in your mind. What did you picture?
I said, okay, can you send me a picture of yourself? Okay. So first picture that arrived was just passport photo. Oh, everybody said, no, Carol. That doesn't look good. We want to see if he's got leg. Maybe he's disabled. Maybe he can't walk or anything. Ask him to send you a picture of all his body. Okay, so I wrote again. The next picture arrived. It was him in budgie smugglers. At Kesurina Beach.
Oh, Peter. Wow, from 0 to 100.
Oh, that's very good. Yeah, Carol, you can go now. Everybody happy for me to go. Oh, that was really good.
Wow, Peter put his best foot forward.
Yeah, he was very good looking and nice man and everything. And so he said, I finished house already. He said, we can start thinking about you bringing you here. But he said, you in that time, in late 50s, early 60s, you couldn't come as a single woman here. You have to somebody to support you or sponsor you, things like that, or be wife. Or, and he said, you know what? We married by proxy. Oh, so I didn't know. So my friend had a brother, another friend, and said, okay, I will stand for him. So we got married by proxy and took the picture and we sent to Peter. And he said, oh, I'm so sorry, I wasn't there.
He wasn't there at your wedding. I didn't even know you could get married by proxy. That seems wild.
Yes, yes. So we start writing and doing the paperwork and I got my passport. And I come to Australia and said, all this way going to this faraway land with no speaking English, don't know no one. I got this man that I fell in love. That's all what I got, but I don't know him.
You've just got the letters and a photo of him and his budgie smugglers on Casuarina Beach.
That's it. I don't know nothing.
If there's ever been an act of bravery, I don't think I've heard one more brave than this, Carol. I want to hear more about it in just a moment. You're listening to Late Lunch on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. Miranda Tetlow is my name. My guest today is Carol Ferlin, and you're hearing the story of how Carol came to Darwin after she fell in love by letters with her husband, Peter. Carol, I'm curious, from Yugoslavia, what coming to Darwin, that just seems like it must have been a world away. Talk to me a little bit about Yugoslavia at that time. As you said, it was communist. This is post-war. What were the conditions like while you were teaching and while you were living there?
I was teaching in small town, very small town, and still didn't have a power. That little town didn't have power yet. So we were doing all by candlelight and by candles, things like that. I didn't mix much because I call myself over there public servant, I couldn't really do much and not even go to church. You are not allowed because communists don't do that. If you go, you're expelled from your work. So I didn't do it. So I was just doing my duty, teaching and at home and things like that.
So what were you imagining the Northern Territory would be like from reading Peter's letters?
I was learning in school. I knew about abattoir near Darwin High School.
Yes, the abattoir, yes.
Yeah, I knew about that. And I knew about Melbourne because we saw the movie On the Beach with Ava Gardner, I don't know, Gregory Peck, I think, I'm not sure. I knew about this and I knew about cities, things like that. But Darwin, I didn't know nothing else.
So you've been married by proxy. You were making that big trip to Australia. What year is this, Carol?
I come here 1961.
1961. What do you remember about the trip, the plane trip?
I sat on the plane the same, like my suitcase probably was traveling better than me.
Now, this is funny, actually, because Peter wanted you to fly by plane. He didn't want you to come by boat.
I wanted to come with a boat. And he said no, because he had a few friends that had even their wives with the kids coming on the boat. But they find somebody else on the boat and they never got to their husbands. He said, no, you go by plane, you fly in the plane. Oh, God. Well, they put me sitting. I never went. I sat on that plane all the way. I changed the plane in Cairo. From Cairo to Darwin, I never move. I never move. I never eat nothing. I never drink nothing. I was just thinking, what I'm doing, where I'm going, what's going to happen. I can't speak. I don't know what I'm going to say or anything like that. I said, this is my destiny. That's meant to be. And that's it. You accept and you come. And all I know, I said, he's been good to me. He wrote lovely letters to me. He used to send me some money, English sterling, and supporting me like that, you know. I said, you know, his parents come to see me. And that was enough for me. I had something that's going to belong to me, you know, because I never had no one. First man that I gave a cuddle, and I had a cuddle, was Peter at airport. But I saw there were three men standing on the outside, and looking. And one in the middle, it was Peter. His mom told me, look very good at me. When you see me, you see Peter. And that was, he just looked like his mom. And I come down to him, and they took me to immigration, all these things. I didn't know nothing, and they knew about. Peter went to tell them, this is my wife coming. And he hugged me. As I said, first hug in my life. I had somebody, because I never had hug from no family, from no one. That was first hug I got, and it was really good hug and stress. And I said, oh. Then I look him. We come home, he already built nice home at Nightcliff, and I had all what I supposed to have, but we couldn't communicate it.
Because he spoke Italian and yes. English, and yes. You spoke Croatian.
I just spoke Croatian.
How did you communicate then in those early days?
Yes, no, shake head, all these things. But he was so good, he said, Carol, listen to the radio. Talk to the people and learn. If you make mistake, don't worry, keep going. You know, that's how you learn. And that's how I was learning on the radio and with my friend across the road. I had an Australian lady. She was so good to me. She was like my sister. We would every day meet, had a cup of coffee and talk about it. And she would say, this is a cup, saucer, knife, fork. She would teach me English and all these things. I was so pleased. We are still friends today. She's like sister to my kids, auntie to my kids. We just love each other, and I'm really grateful she helped me a lot, and you know, from beginning. Yeah.
Was there anyone else from Croatia in Darwin at that time? Much of a community?
There was not many people. Peter didn't know, because he didn't mix with Croatian. He belonged to Italian community. And he often, from jungle, come to Javin, and he stay in the hostel and in the boarding houses here when he was with Italian family. He never mixed with, never knew Croatian family. But on the way from my place, going to Nightcliff Shopping Center, I saw on the letterbox name, Croatian surname. And I look, and that was, I was already pregnant, expecting my child, first child. And I said, oh, that sounds like Croatian, but I wouldn't go in. But this lady, some Italian people knew few Croatians, and word went around, yeah, there's another Croatian lady just living near you there, said, why don't you try to see if you can meet her. So she's expecting baby, and she got black, dark hair. Maybe, you know. Next day I passed, and she sing to her son in Croatian, sleep, sleep, my son. Uncle, yeah, they are Croatian family here. So she looked through the window and see me. She come down, and she said, excuse me, lady, are you Croatian? I said, yeah. And she opened her arms like that and said in Croatian, your house is my house. Come and give me another cuddle. It was, yeah. Yeah.
Another magical hug in Darwin.
She's a good friend, godmother to my kids. Yeah, but she was the first person that I met. And I start speaking Croatian.
That must have been such a relief. Yeah. I can't imagine after.
Then she said, how I can talk to Peter? I said, but she already speak English, because she's been here 6 years before me. She came. And so we all meet and we all communicated and things like that. But she, yeah.
So she could open that doorway too for you.
Yeah, yes. So that was lovely.
I'm curious, So you and Peter met without a language in common. How did your relationship develop over the years? How did you get to know each other and fall in love?
We are really suited each other. We never complain. He really loved me and teach me all good manners, how to live here in this strange country. And he was just everything to me. He was so good, so kind. Never had hard words or anything. Always nice. Always holding my hands, giving me cuddle. I was everything to him and he was everything to me. Language wasn't barrier. I think if you fell in love or anything like that, the language doesn't say nothing.
What an incredible new home you're creating. Your son Eddie said you had a bit of a technique for going to the shops. This is in Aurelia Street. What did you do?
I take last clove of garlic or peel of potatoes or onion or something and take and just show them what I want. Okay. Or said, maybe how much you want. Or eggs, I would say, like that. Said, oh, they go and bring me 6 dozen. Oh, no. I said, ah, only 6, half a dozen. So they were teaching me how to say half a dozen. So I would have a half a dozen eggs and things like that. They go to the butchers pointing the things, you know. I was forever buying mince, forever. And I want the steak, but I said mince. The butcher, who really was really good and helping me a lot, belonged to the Evergreens Club that I belong to there at Nightcliff. He's there, and we laugh. And when he met me, he was butcher's apprentice over there, and he taught me how to say all about meat and everything, and we had a lovely time. Yeah. People were very nice and trying to help.
So you really made your home in Darwin. This was with your 2 kids, with Peter. You built a beautiful relationship. And you'd also embraced this whole new place, this whole new country, a whole new climate, things like cyclones. What was Cyclone Tracy like for you and your family?
It was terrible. It was terrible. We just make about 11:30. Our house start shaking. It was on the piers. Start shaking and Peter said, let's go down. And we just make him from the steps down. We had 3 rooms under the house. And we went to one of the room. And in the meantime, how it just blow away. And we are in the room downstairs with the kids under the bed because the wood from the house behind us came and broke the window and all glass, shattered the glass everywhere and rain come in the room where we were staying. So kids and I went under the bed and we stayed till the morning, all night. Under the thing, when the dike start come, you come out. Oh God, it was terrible. It was like atomic bomb down everything. Everything was down in our street. It was terrible. But we were happy. We lost the house, but we are still together. Nothing happened to us. We are all together.
Did you stay in Darwin afterwards?
We were evacuated to my sister-in-law in Geelong, stay over there, and Peter stayed behind to help because at that time he was working with city council, so he had to stay in the rebuild building and trying to do it to here, stay here. Peter didn't want to borrow the money and start building all over again, going the debts, so we left to Adelaide. We left Darwin, and Peter got transfer his job from city council to Adelaide. Dr. Ella Steck was mayor here, and she said, if you ever want to come back, you just ring me up. Your job is still safe with us. He said, you won't lose nothing. You just come and stay with, you know, let us know. So Peter wasn't happy because from Darwin going to Adelaide, big city, you have to go to work 1 hour before. Long pants, long trousers, shirts, all these things. He said, "No, Carol, I'm going back to Darwin. If I have to die, I die under the banana tree." And she said, "Okay," so we ring up the council here, and they said, "Yeah, Peter, you can come." So he left and left me alone over there with the kids to sell the house. When I sold the house, I come here, and he bought a house here just with the floorboards. And we had a big shed, and we live in the shed by the time we are building. And we are trying to do with the money that we have, so slowly by slowly. But Peter wasn't feeling well, so he had a mild heart attack. So doctor told him, you know, take easy, all these things. But men, stubborn, don't think, you know, they have to provide for family. I have to, you know, wet season is coming. We haven't got house finished yet. So he keep working. In October 77, he had massive heart attack. A poedy was hit with him when it happened. I was in the school with my daughter. It was teachers and parents' night. When I come home, I saw ambulance in the front of the house. It was just terrible. Yeah. So after a few days, it was that massive heart attack, and Peter passed away. And I was left with two kids. Eddie was 14, and Lydia was 12 years old. House wasn't finished yet, and wet season coming. So Italian community and city council, they come and they finish house for us. So I'm always grateful to Italian community and for people who work with city council at that time. And the Mayor Elastek, that really helped. So that's how, just before wet season, we were able to walk in our new brand new house finished. Yeah, it was really good.
It must have been completely heartrending to lose Peter in that way and so suddenly.
Yeah, it was, yeah. But what pulled me through, I think, thinking of myself being without parents, what it meant. So I tried to be brave and strong and survive for my kids. I'm blessed.
What an amazing family you built, Carol. Son, a daughter.
I got four grandchildren.
Four grandchildren.
Yeah, and one grandchild. Yeah. And I'm so happy when we meet together. And just from three of us when Peter died, we are now about 12. So it's so lovely. Every time we meet together, I have tears in my eyes. I'm happy. They are really happy tears. Yeah.
What would you say to people about love, about giving yourself up to love?
Every day is new beginning, and be respectful for everyone.
Would you tell other people to be brave?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Be brave. I was brave enough being through a lot of things. Had hard childhood. Been through war. In concentration camp, surviving cyclone Tracy, lost husband, I'm still here, and enjoying life with my family, lovely family.
Carol, I'm so glad you are. I'm so glad your son and daughter are here, your four grandkids, your great grandkids. It is an honor to have you in our community, and thank you for sharing your story. It is just astonishing.
Thank you, Miranda. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Carol Ferlin. Carol arrived in Darwin, as you heard, in 1961, married to her Italian husband. She couldn't speak English or Italian when she arrived, but she went on to have kids, grandkids, as you heard, even a great-grandchild, all here in the Northern Territory. Miranda Tetlow is my name. It's always great to have your company. You take care.